Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. We're going to talk about love. What? Love? What's that about? It's about so much of our relationships. Are they loving? Are we loving? What do we expect from love? What do we expect from our relationships? Do we want them? How much do we want them? How much do we need them? What can we do for them? Or what might not we be doing for them? What can we do better? That's what we're going to talk about. And to do that, I read a book called Life Cycles, The Five Essential Stages of Lasting Love, written by Linda Carroll, who's now in the studio to talk about love cycles. Welcome, Linda.
Hi.
I'm so glad you could join us and help us love better. We all need to, don't we?
I think we all do. I think that's what we're here for, really, to learn to love.
I do, too. I think that's all that counts. When people pass on, what do people remember about them is how much they might have loved them, or they were loved by them, or other people loved them, mm-hmm. how much they contributed to love in the world. That seems to capture what people care about.
Right. I think it also, when people are leaving, when they're dying, that's certainly what they think about, is how well did I love?
Right. So let's help them do it better.
Yes.
Now, let's start off with the five essential stages of lasting love, because we all go through them, not just once, and we can go through them many times with the same partner.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And so we want to know what these stages are, so when we're in them, we can handle them better.
Well, I don't think we just go through them with the same partner. I think we go through them in all our relationships. And in fact, in our relationships with lots of things that we, quote, love, our work, for example.
Right.
You know,
right.
Our passions.
There are different ways that we see things, and they change each time we're faced with something. We might see it differently. So each time we're faced with a partner, for instance, we might see them through different lenses depending on circumstances.
That's right. I think that we have this idea in our culture that the what I call the first stage or the merge is what love is. And any kind of passion, you know, we usually get into something, whether it's work or playing an instrument or being a painter. We get into something because we have some passion that drives us towards it. And then once we start in on the relationship, the project, that we are going to hit different seasons and cycles, because everything in our world goes in cycles. But I think in our culture, we're pretty programmed to think that that initial cycle that brings us in is the cycle that means that we're supposed to do it. It's the right cycle. And when we hit the winters or the foggy days or the struggles, then we think something's wrong.
And we don't call it love anymore.
No, that's right. Or say we've made a mistake.
Yes. So let's start with merge. That's the romantic part. That's the brain chemistry part.
Yeah, that's the part that says, I found my other half. We two are one. And in that brain chemistry with all those changes, all we see is all the ways that this fits. It's like we go into a trance. You know, we just see all the possibilities. And that's great. We don't see the red flags, though. We don't see where this is not going to just be a free ride.
Well, we don't interpret the red flags as red. We have brain chemistry that seems to distort color.
That's wonderful. That's a good, I love that. Yeah, that's right. We don't. It blocks it out. It's like we go colorblind, or we take what would be a red flag and we say, "Oh no, that is we somehow rationalize it as a part of what's going to be wonderful about it."
And there's a long history of understanding this. And right on your cover, you quote Harvell Hendricks. And so he and his partner have determined that we often marry people who we know, perhaps our subconscious knows we're going to have trouble with, because they represent the struggles of our youth and our with our parents, and often there are traits of our parents and those people that we're blinded to at first.
Yeah, our unfinished business. They call, actually, I didn't. I'm not quoting them. It's an endorsement, a marvelous endorsement.
Well, that's a quote from them saying how wonderful your book
is. Yeah, so wonderful. They did that. But I think that's one certainly a part of it. You know, we've been trying to understand love as human beings from the very beginning of time. The oldest poem that I know about is a poem, a love poem written on a cave. I think it's Egypt, thousands of years ago. And the attempt to try to understand this feeling, and that's what love is, it's a feeling, has gone on in all the disciplines and all the cultures all over the world forever. And we have some understanding. For instance, Harville and Helen Hunt, Hendricks Hunt, they believe that we are attracted to somebody, as you said, who represents part of our unfinished business in our life. There's all kinds of ways to understand who we love and why we love, but there's a part of it that's an essential mystery, and we will never understand it. So just like we'll never really understand, I won't understand after 35 years of being a therapist, I really don't understand who is going to work it out and who isn't. You know, I see couples in my practice who have so much going for them, and they just, some essential ingredient that I don't recognize, but they do, is not there, and they part. And I see couples who have the biggest messes you would not believe in their relationship. Lots of trouble, lots of hurt, and they work it through to an incredible relationship. So it's sort of a cliche, but every year I think I know less about
sure.
about love and about who loves who.
When my wife and I met, her friends and family just couldn't understand how she could have chosen me. What a mistake. I was so different from everything that they would have expected for her. And now, 35 years later, they're all very glad that she made the choice that she made.
Yeah, so she knew something. There's something. So that's an ingredient in this. One of the things I talk about in The Merge, and this is a double-sided. It's kind of complicated. I say, the strength of the feelings does not necessarily represent the strength of the rightness you should be with that person. You can fall madly in love with someone who is totally inappropriate for you, or somebody who can't love you back. So that's one part. You know, the strength of the feelings doesn't mean we need to be with that person.
And the way we find out is going through the process.
Yes.
Going through these five cycles.
Right. So what you're talking about with your wife is that something in you knew something.
Automatically. I knew within minutes that I was going to spend the rest of my life with her.
But here's the danger of that statement, and that is that people feel that for somebody who is, let's say, a person who's very narcissistic and can't make room for another person in their life. You can also feel that knowing you need to be with somebody with a person who's really bad for you. So there's an imposter.
Right. I was lucky.
You were lucky. You
it was
know.
Also my third time around.
Okay. But feelings.
So third, I always say third time is the charm.
Is that right? Maybe you learned some things, you know?
Right.
Maybe you selected differently. But mm-hmm. It's a tricky thing because your story, now somebody could be listening in and feeling that for some, you know, some a man falls for runaway brides who always comes right up to the moment of commitment and runs and has done this forever and ever. And so somebody's listening and saying, oh, I love this woman so much, but she keeps dumping me. But look at him. He knew, I know, so I'm going to hang in there. But sometimes we need not to hang in there. So there's a real judgment call in that. And the way I talk about it is let the chemicals wear out. And find out who you're with without the chemicals.
Well, you and I are very realistic about relationships. But I remember going back when therapists did everything they could to save a marriage, even when the couples weren't right for each other.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And I think that, you know, what I say to people when I see them is, the marriage is over. You know, when not when they when they've crashed, when they're recovering from some sort of devastation or betrayal, I say let the marriage go. Let's see if we can create something new, a new marriage. But let's not try to get the old marriage. Let's try to heal this.
Right.
And out of that comes the right thing.
If there's a possibility, maybe it's good to just end everything and then they'll find each other again.
That's right. That's what I talk about that a lot in the stage four of the decision of what to do.
Okay, that's stage four. Now, we haven't even talked about stage two and three.
No. Okay, so...
What's two?
Two is when the chemicals start to wear off and you begin to realize that you miss yourself and some of the things you fell in love with are starting to annoy you. Mm-hmm. The other side of, you know, my husband fell in love with, one of the things he fell in love with about me was that he thought I was so generous and I would give money to everybody on the street. I would give money to causes.
And then later on, he just wanted to stop that to save money.
Yes, we joined our checkbook and we joined our money. And then he would say, are you really going to give this money away? Hey, we're going to dinner. Why are you handing it to that man with the dog? Suddenly, it wasn't such a great thing. And so those qualities that we fall in love with, we see the other side of them. Mm-hmm. And I think I was a compulsive giveaway to people with dog person. Uh-huh. That was a big sentence, wasn't it?
But well, I mean, there are people who are very generous, but there are people who are impractically generous.
That's right. There has to be some kind of balance in our, you know, you can't give away your money for your own food.
Right.
So those qualities we fall in love with start to annoy us. We move into a power struggle. We move into what I call the one fight couples have, which is you're not me. And yes. When we first fall in love, we think, oh, you are me. And everything is a reflection of my best self and us and that we're meant to be together. But then those chemicals wear off and I start to find myself annoyed at how you do things. And some of those are big. Some of those are little. You know, I've known my husband 40 years. We've been together 30. And we still fight about how to do dishes. And I know it sounds stupid and cliche and small, but it's not.
That's true. My wife doesn't do the dishes right.
Well, neither does my husband. Maybe we should do a contest. And we get really, I mean, we get charged about it still.
Yes.
You know? And it's because neither of us have died from how the dishes are done, but there is that you're not me argument. That's a small thing.
But there are a lot of you're not me's in a relationship. And here I am 35 years later, really thrilled to be with my wife.
Oh, how lovely.
And she with me. We talk about it, how happy we are, and we're constantly rolling our eyes about each other in the ways that we're different.
Yes, that's right. That's great. Yeah. So when you're not me argument starts, and some people call it the power struggle. You know, this is the stages that I talk about are very much the stages of what happens when we have a baby or when we were babies and we come in with this merge with our mother and we don't know the difference between ourselves and her. And at some point we start to push away saying, wait a minute, I'm not you. I'm different. We call those the terrible twos, but they're not terrible. They're just the 2-year-old is saying, I'm me. This is what happens in stage two in a relationship.
Well, even in the womb, you get too big and you say, I'm uncomfortable now. I'm getting out of here.
That's right. We keep outgrowing it, don't we?
Right.
So that's stage two is the power struggle. I'm not you. You're not me. Not only that, we're different. Not only that, you're wrong in how you do the dishes and other things. and all kinds of things happen. Our sex drives, you know, which are so enhanced by the love chemicals in the first stage. And people who have low libidos or all those chemicals are aphrodisiacs. They're totally into sex all the time. People who are more closed or rigid in their emotional ability or willingness to connect are open. So you have couples who are talking all night, making love all night. The chemicals wear off. One goes back to not talking very much about themselves, and one goes back to not thinking much about sex. And so then you start in those power struggles. So it's like, okay, now we're in the work. How do we do it?
Right. And in the early stages, people say, right away they say, oh, I'm an open book. You know everything about me.
Yes, that's right.
And then we find out that we were reading the wrong book.
That's right. That's great. I like to say love is a feeling. And a long-term relationship is a skill set.
Right.
And there's different groups of skills that that I think of in each of the stages.
And you have a chapter on essential skills.
I have a chapter on essential skills, but you know, if I, okay, so to go through, the third stage is disenchantment. And the disenchantment is the opposite of the merge. You know, a trance comes down, we see everything that's right in disenchantment. The power struggles have gotten sort of concreted in, and sometimes we're stuck in what I call a loop. I go into the loops a lot in the book, and we can't see anything but the trouble. So there are two trances. Everything is right, everything is wrong. And then we make a decision about what to do. The final, it's not the final stage. I call it stage five, wholehearted love. And I say it's not the final stage because that's like saying enlightenment is the end. We don't stay in wholehearted, but we know how to get there. And when we have the skills to be wholehearted, which are inside skills, then we can get back there. We fall off again and again. You know, we fall in love with our partner on Monday. We fall out of love with them on Tuesday morning. And then we get really disenchanted on Tuesday afternoon. But when you've gone through the cycle and you've got the wholehearted skills, you know how to step away from the trouble and how to get back to it.
There's an old musical called I Do, I Do.
I sort of remember that, yeah.
It was from the 60s or 70s. And not long ago, my brother-in-law starred in it. And there are only two characters in the whole musical, husband and wife. And it starts on their wedding day, and it ends on their 50th anniversary. And the whole scenery, it's all in their bedroom.
Oh.
And so you go through all of their cycles with them, and you find out through it, well, during the play, I was sitting there, every 10 minutes I'd be looking for my jacket, knowing this couple's not going to make it. And then they rediscover themselves.
Yeah,
and
that sounds marvelous.
Replenish.
That sounds like my book, Love Cycles.
And after 50 years of marriage, they realize, okay, this is how it works.
Yeah.
You know, you go through all of these discouragements and betrayals and all these things that go on where you feel that you just can't have this marriage. And then you really learn how to forgive, have compassion, create better priorities for yourselves, and rediscover the love for each other. And it keeps happening.
Yeah.
And what was interesting was that I was at a matinee, and there were all these older couples there because old people don't like to drive at night. And so at the end of the play, there were all these couples walking out, and they had smiles on their faces. And you could see they were saying, I guess we're okay.
It's right, because that's what people love about my book. I've gotten lots of letters since the book was released last month about, and they pretty much say the same thing, which is, I'm so glad to have read Love Cycles because I know we're normal. And, you know, I'm in a way, this is sort of the anti-hype. I mean, I was reading about George Clooney somewhere on an airplane yesterday and his beautiful wife, and the capture was happily ever after. And those are our images in our culture, sort of fairy tale people going off into the sunset in Venice, happily ever after. And I thought, you know, that is part of what the trouble is that we're up against, is thinking that that's what it really is going to be like.
But it is happy ever after in spurts.
There's moments of it, but isn't that true with the rest of our life? You know, there's great days, and then there's hard days.
Right.
And then there's just boring, blah days.
There are times we just don't get along.
That's right. And that's true in the relationships.
Different purposes, different people with different needs. And we can't always satisfy each other's needs.
That's right. But the wholehearted skill is really comes from within. So here's something else about the book that I think is that I care about. I cared about putting it in the book, and I did, which is you don't have to finish up with this with the person you started with to become wholehearted. It's an inside job. And some relationship books, which are have wonderful ideas and thoughts, also kind of say, well, you get the brass ring if you end up with the person. Some relationships don't work out.
They're not meant to be.
They're not meant to be, or one person desperately wants it and the other person says no. But you can still become whole. If love is what we're here for, and if wholehearted is, if relationships are an inside job, both of which I believe, we can become wholehearted with all our relationships, including the ones that break our heart. And that's, I think that that is sometimes the biggest, certainly the roughest practice, but it's also true. And I have good stories about that. I won't tell you the stories now.
But what I'm feeling is that this wholehearted thing has to do with how whole our own hearts are in the way that we hold ourselves to be able to hold others.
Yes, that's right.
And that's if we can feel wholehearted, then we can accept the journey with whoever and whatever.
That's right. Yeah, that. So when I started writing the chapter, I had trouble writing it for a year. I couldn't do it. And my friend Sam Keen, who wrote the preface for this book, who's a wonderful writer and philosopher himself, he said, well, the problem you're having is because you're trying to write about wholehearted. You need to write about what gets in the way. So I have one chapter called Barriers and one chapter called Bridges to Becoming Wholehearted. And I think that that's our practice. And in the first part, when we talk about skills of how to get through some of the power conflicts and the struggles, certainly communication skills are so important, and I teach those. And self-awareness skills are so important, knowing when we're triggered. But to become wholehearted, we need another skill set. And I think that the best way we find those is through the wisdom traditions, those skills of forgiveness, patience, mercy, kindness, intentionality.
It's self-development, but in a good relationship, it also gets developed because of your partner.
Yes.
For the help of your partner.
That's right.
I'm fortunate to have a wife who's a very positive person who everybody loves, and she's a role model for me. I'm the curmudgeon. And so I've really learned to really hold life in a much richer way and not be so defensive and fearful. And so I think there are two different things in a relationship. One is, are you married to someone who actually is willing to go the journey with you?
That's right.
And to do the hard work? And if they are, then the two of you can work hard together. And are you yourself willing to call yourself on your limitations?
Yes, that's right. That's right. So it sounds like you could have written this book too. You've lived it.
Well, yeah, and I've also, I counsel couples and I've seen a lot and understand a lot. So I, and living it, you know, to be a counselor, it's always good to be a role model too. And my wife also counsels couples, and she's so proud to tell them that she's in a successful relationship.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. And I feel that way, but I also feel, I also feel humble because I know how hard it is, and every day isn't wonderful. You know, there are some hard moments, and that keeps me humble working with people because I don't think that I'm in any way. I know how hard it is, and I have a lot of empathy for how hard it is. Just some of us have more difficult natures, too.
You know, and there are cycles that we're each in, and there are times when I'm down and she's up, and times when she's down and I'm up. And what it happens occasionally is we'll both be down at the same time, and we'll look at each other and go, "This doesn't help."
And then what do you do?
Right.
Well, if you have the awareness you have, then you can step away from it and just say, "You know, it's a foggy day, and fog passes."
Yes, we have to fall back on our deeper instincts and commitment too.
Yeah.
I think so much is commitment, but what you and I are trying to get across to people is that commitment is really important, but there are many levels of commitment at work here. It's not willing to go the course, because you have to be with someone else who's willing to go the course.
Well, the commitment is to yourself. The commitment is, I'm going to do the best I can at removing my own obstacles to loving.
Right.
That's the one commitment that we have, that we're in charge of.
Even if it's about getting help from the outside,
yes.
Like people come to you and say, we can't do it ourselves.
Right.
We don't know how.
But you know, something really good news and interesting to me is I've been a therapist for 35 years. And when I started, people would come who were on death's door of relationship. But now I see so many people who are not there in a good spot. And they say, we know what's coming. Maybe they've been there before. We want to learn the skills before we fall off the cliff. We want to figure out how to do this in a way that doesn't damage. Because in those hard places, like in the disenchantment part, we can do a lot of damage. When we're hurt, when we're in a power struggle, then we can make things worse. So how can we prevent that?
If they've read your book, Life Cycles.
Love Cycles.
Love Cycles.
That's okay. It's funny because it is Life Cycles.
Right. Yeah. It is. Then they can identify. See, this is so helpful, because then you know when you're in disenchantment and you can handle it consciously because you've read the book about it.
Yeah.
And you see what the hope is for dealing with these struggles.
That's right. And the way out. There's a roadmap in here. And the roadmap shows you the way through, the way out. And I think it is just willingness. If you read the book, you can find your way through it.
Well, and you know, it's great to be able to help people do that, and to help them make choices, and sometimes to help them make choices to end a relationship is promising, actually, because it helps people find themselves in deeper ways. Sometimes you're lost in yourself in the relationship, and you can't find yourself until you've gotten out of it.
That's right. One of the things I know is that I don't ever know what people should do. I mean, I know if they're in danger, they need to leave, you know, but I don't know who should work it out with who. I just say, here's what I know. Here's how I can help you. Let's try to heal the relationship. And sometimes with healing, the patient dies.
Right.
And sometimes with healing, the patient lives. So I don't get into whether they live or die. I get into trying to help them heal. I know how to do that. And then the right thing happens. Because sometimes people, when they get out of the pain, they remember what they loved about the relationship. And they're back in it full on. So,
and then I think seeing the whole journey as love is really what's
important.
Yes,
that's beautiful. That's right. That's right.
Because love is being willing to do the work.
Yeah. For your own sake, for your own soul's sake, as well as for the relationship.
Right. So this book, Love Cycles, The Five Essential Stages of Lasting Love, by Linda Carroll. That's spelled C-A-R-R-O-L-L. Do you have a website?
Yes, it's lovecycles.org. And you can even go and take a free quiz to show you where you are on this Love Cycles map. And it's a great quiz because it gives you just different ideas at each stage for things that make it go more easily.
That's wonderful. Linda, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.